You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 4th of November. The Jazz go west, lose both. One far more painful than the other. And some weaknesses show that are either disconcerting or not. We'll break it down. Coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look at what's going on with your Utah Jazz, hopefully making it more fun to be a Jazz fan every day. But an 0-2 weekend does not do that. Does not make you feel that way as a Jazz fan. I know that. Really, one of these two losses is far worse than the other, and that's the Kings loss. Frankly, the Jazz are not playing well. Things do not feel very good about the way they're playing. It's not what we anticipated on the season. There's a bunch of little burrs in the saddle right now. And yet, had they grabbed an off defensive rebound on the final play of the game, or, you know, one or two Sacramento prayers not go in, or just played a lot better, frankly, against Sacramento than they did, the Jazz would be 5-2 with losses against the Clippers and the Lakers in LA on both of them. Both those teams looking every bit as good as we thought they were going to be. And I think we'd feel fine. And really, this stretch right here where you play at the Clippers, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, I think the whole time is you're going to get 1 out of 3 probably in this stretch. And then you have the Warriors, Brooklyn, Memphis, Minnesota, Golden State, New Orleans, where hopefully you can start getting some wins under your belt. So the Sacramento loss is the one that just kind of stings. The Jazz just did not play with a lot of force. And, you know, as one person said, you know, we signed men to beat boys. And that's what is the case. Sacramento's just a very young team. So the Friday night loss to me is the one that really jumps out as much more problematic and just wasn't what we expected out of this team. The offense overall, again, was it's interesting. If you kind of actually look at the cleaning the glass numbers, the offense of the Jazz was actually better that day than the Kings offense, which is weird. And to lose a game, that doesn't happen very often. But it makes, you know, kind of funky. There's a bunch of things in that one. That actually was one of our, you know, just, again, not a great offensive performance. We shot the ball well. One of the things that is going on is that in that one, we turned it over at such a rate. Two phenomena are hurting the offense right now. One is the turnover rate's really high, and then the lack of offensive rebounding makes for not quite as many possessions and makes it hard to have as good an offensive game as they have had. The defense slipped both two nights on the road. Those were the two worst defensive performances of the season against Sacramento and LA. And, you know, that might be just kind of this weird opening schedule. I don't really want to put it on that because I think that that's a little bit of a cop-out. I do think there's something real to it. I mean, just playing 6 games or 7 games to open the season, never in the same city twice. It's going to be nice for these guys to be home today, have the day off, practice tomorrow, play at home, be at home, at least for a little while. We just have this weird stretch to start the game or start the season where other than this one little stretch, we just don't, you know, we don't play a lot of home games back to back to open the season until finally now. So I do think that had a little bit of an impact just in the way the team's playing. It just seemed like there was a lot of slippage overall. The Clippers game, the offense just was really bad for most of the game. I mean, they went 15 minutes where they scored 12 points from the second to third quarter, and it's just surprising that the offense is struggling at this level. This is not something I think any of us anticipated. And again, it's kind of strange. So if you dig into it a little bit, the shooting numbers are actually going into last night weren't bad. They are now. They're 14th in the league. Going into last night, the Jazz had the 4th best catch and shoot numbers in the league. But the weird thing was that they were getting the 4th fewest amount of threes. So there's a lot of things in here that just aren't quite adding up to what we anticipated because of this team and as how this team was built from the very beginning. So I think, you know, that's – and last night you look at some of the numbers and there's then some things that are just a little strange going on. You know, when Royce O'Neal was on the floor, our offense really struggled. Same thing with Jeff Green and Tony Bradley. The defensive numbers were really high as he replaced Ed Davis last night. And I thought did some things well, but at the same time, I think we saw a little bit of some of his struggles. Rudy had 5 screen assists last night. Like when we've been churning, he's had 10 in a ball game. You know, teams are dropping their big underneath Rudy, so that there's always a man between Rudy and the basket. He got 1 dunk last night on a dish off instead of getting, you know, the 3 he was getting last year because teams have adjusted. And Rudy's just not very good right now. If you put a man between him and the basket, Rudy's not scoring. That's the limit on Rudy's offensive game is if there's a man between him and the basket, he's not able to get to the basket. There are 2 issues, though, that I think probably are more prevalent than any others. One of them is the defensive rebounding. Well, I'd say there's 3 actually right now. One of them is the defensive rebounding. So in the last 2 games, after being really, really good in all the defensive rebounding up to that moment, the Jazz came into the game in Sacramento as the 3rd best defensive rebounding team in the league, which was really surprising. But they had been just great against Phoenix. They were like brilliant, and they weren't great against the Lakers in that loss. And then all of a sudden against Sacramento and the Clippers, they were bad. They allowed 28% of all opponents' misses to be offensive rebounds. And then against the Clippers, it was an obscene 39%, the highest rate of any team in the NBA all season long. That was the worst defensive rebounding performance of any team all year long. What's weird about this is it doesn't totally jive. I looked into this in the offseason. It doesn't totally jive. So the first thing I've heard from is, well, we missed Derek Favors. Yeah, that doesn't make sense because Derek Favors was never on the floor to close a game. Right? So we weren't closing games in the final 5 minutes with, and so maybe some of this, by the way, is, you know, we might want to talk about how damn good the Clippers are. I mean, they're really good. But, all right, so let's look at our personnel. So that doesn't totally jive. Now, you have Jay Crowder, who for his career is a 14.5 defensive rebounding percentage. Okay, that's not good. Last year for Utah, he was a 15.9%. Okay, so Jay Crowder's not, that's an incredibly low number. He's not a good defensive rebounder. Bojan Bogdanović is not either. Bojan Bogdanović is a 13.7% defensive rebounder this year, and going into this season, he's 11.6. Okay, so that's a 3% drop in percentage of defensive rebounds. That's real. Like, it's not huge. It's not, but, okay, Joe Ingles is the same guy on the floor. Donovan Mitchell is the same guy on the floor. What's interesting is I'm wondering if the lack of defensive rebounding actually might be a Ricky Rubio thing. Ricky Rubio's defensive rebounding percentage last year was 11.8% defensive rebounding percentage. And the year before that in Utah was a 15.3%. And for his career is a 13.1%. What that means is that Ricky Rubio gets 13.1% of all defensive rebounds during his, when he's on the floor. As Mike Conley is a 5%. So interestingly, I actually think if you're looking for statistically where the rebounding issue is, it's the change from Ricky Rubio to Mike Conley. Excuse me. Mike Conley's a 9%, 5% overall, 9%. For his career, this year he's 6.8%. Last year was 9.7%, but this year he's only 6.8%. So Ricky Rubio, but even Ricky Rubio, that's not like, I mean, Ricky Rubio's down from like, it's 12 to 9. Like, it's a little subtle change from having Ricky Rubio not being a part of the rebounding to Mike Conley and Jay Crowder to Bojan Bogdanović. Ricky's actually a good rebounder for his position. We closed with Royce O'Neal last night. And Royce O'Neal, for his first year in the league, was a really good defensive rebounder. Since then, in the last year and then this year, has been kind of distinctly average. He was 16.7% and 14.4% this year. And offensive rebounding, he has done very, very little. In fact, he got his first offensive rebound of the year yesterday. So if he's playing instead of Joe Ingles for defensive purposes, as he was for a portion of last night, there's actually no difference really there. In fact, Royce is statistically a little better defensive rebounder than Joe Ingles. So it stems back to the Ricky Rubio, Mike Conley, and Bojan Bogdanović, Jay Crowder. But the Jay Crowder one should be easily fixed because Jay Crowder's not a good defensive rebounder for that position. So it's interesting. The last two teams just crashed and we didn't handle it. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy is located in Woods Cross, also up in Logan. Chevy and the Murdochs have been in Utah for 90 years now and doing great work. The Murdoch family with a no regrets policy, making sure that everything experience you have is top notch. And the lineup of Chevy trucks you know well. The Colorado and the Silverado are the legendary lines. The big SUVs, the Tahoe and the Suburban. And now the Blazer. I'm driving the Blazer right now. It's absolutely terrific. My son actually had to drive it for a day or two. Came back super impressed and really, really liked it as well. So make sure you check out the Blazer that's there. They also have the Equinox and the SUV lineup that I've driven in the past. All these are just so well made, quiet, well done. Nice display up front for you. Solid car, feels really good, good pickup. Check it all out at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Say hi to the crew there, Ben up in Logan, and find out about the great Chevy connection to Utah, the Americana of Chevy, all there for you at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Treat yourself to the meal you deserve. Have your favorite restaurant come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners take $5 off your first order, $15 or more. Download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON. Hollinger and Duncan's out today as well. All right, the number two concern is Mike Conley. It's only 7 games, so I'm a bit reluctant to worry about it too much. But 6 of the 7 games for Mike have not been good. Of the 6 or 7 games, you know, he's 1-for-16, 3-for-11, 5-for-11 against Sacramento in the 32-point win, 0-for-7 against Phoenix, blow-up game against the Clippers, he goes for 29. Pretty good game against Sacramento, 5-of-13, 6-of-8 from the free throw line, getting the line, 4 assists, 4 steals, 4 rebounds. Hard to call that a bad game. He had 19 points. 38% shooting's probably not where he wants to be, but he did enough other things than last night, 2-of-10. So saying he had a bad game is probably a little bit of a stretch. I think I did say that in 6 of the 7 games, but you know, maybe our expectations on Mike are a little high. Here's some of the things that I think are going on. I'll try to dig into some of the numbers and see if I can prove this at all. But a few things that are happening with Mike Conley, and some of it is just the way defenses are doing to the Jazz right now. So one of the things the defenses are doing to the Jazz right now is that they are not allowing Rudy Gobert to get behind the big. So when we run a pick and roll, and by the way, interestingly enough, the pick and roll numbers between Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert are actually pretty good. So, you know, as much as it feels like that is just not working at all, the numbers actually going to last night are pretty good. So one of the things that's happening here is that Mike Conley is coming out the pick and roll with Rudy Gobert. The big is staying below Rudy. So they're no longer letting Rudy get that lob. He's gone from, to be exact, 3.8 lob dunks a game last year to 2.3 going into last night. And I think he only got one last night. So he's got 15 in 7 games now. And not lob dunks, just dunks and just dunks in general. So teams are just not allowing Rudy to get to where he wants to be. The other thing is teams have really begun to take away the Jazz catch and shoot game. Last night felt a little bit better, but going into last night's game, the Jazz had 19 catch and shoot games, catch and shoots a game compared to 24 a year ago. And some of that is one of the questions we kind of asked all offseason long, which is how much of this is because of the fact that last year, because our guys weren't good shooters, and so they were getting wide open catch and shoot because of the fact that they're not good shooters. And the answer seems to be that that was part of it, that teams have simply decided that they are not going to allow the Utah Jazz to be able to get those shots. And so what it's doing is taking the Jazz. Now, Mike Conley comes on the pick and roll, and they're sticking to the shooters, and Rudy Gobert has got a guy between him. And now what Mike Conley needs to do is take that little floater. Okay, well, that floater is okay, except for the fact that that floater is not a particularly efficient shot. It means that we're not getting our catch and shoot shots. And Mike kind of, I think, right now knows that that's not necessarily what we're hoping to get from him. He's shooting 31% right now on shots that are in the paint, in the key, but not in the restricted area, and he's taking 4.5 a game. And he's not getting to the rim at all. So he's taking one shot a game at the rim. So Mike's coming off the pick right now, and the thing about Mike is about three things are difficult for him right now that he's going to have to adjust to, and hopefully he can. One is, because of his size, I think he's been a pick and pop, and his personnel, Marc Gasol, he's been a pick and pop guard his entire life. We don't have a pick and pop guy on the roster. If you kind of think back at Mike Conley and how he played pick and pop to Marc Gasol. And so as he popped, the big came with Gasol on the pop, leaving the middle of the floor open for Conley. With Rudy, Rudy's rolling. That big is down there kind of playing center field between Rudy and Mike. And now Mike's having a hard time getting the rim, or he's not seeing the rim as open as it was in Memphis. Ironically enough, we all thought, and John Hollinger of Hollinger and Duncan wrote a whole piece on this about how you get more spacing and Mike Conley's going to be. But I actually think the irony is he feels as though he has less spacing because of the fact that with Rudy rolling, the big is there and Mike's seeing the roll and he's not getting the rim. So that's part one. Part two is I do think he's used to the pop, not the lob. Okay? He did not throw a lot of lobs in his career because he hasn't had guys to throw them to. Number three is because he's been the primary offensive player for the Grizzlies all these years, he gets to the free throw line and maybe one step in and he makes his decision. Am I shooting? Am I passing? That's a little early for us. Rudy's not available yet at that point. Rudy's not open on the lob until you bring the big to you. And from that spot, it's hard to make a pass to our corner three shooters. So that decision-making spot where Mike's making it, at least it looks to me, this is probably me overstretching my talents right now. It looks to me as that just is in his habits early. And because that's early, then it's very hard for him to go find any of the other guys. The third part of this is, because he makes that early decision, and it's too early to reach Rudy, and it's hard to get out to our corner three shooters from there. He's not getting any assists, and he's getting turnovers because he's little, and he's trying to make passes through traffic now that he didn't used to make. And he's probably used to now, with what he's used to is having Gasol pop out and Tony Allen or someone slice the baseline, and he finds the cutter. We don't have that same cutters because we're spacing. So it's all incredibly different, much more different than I ever realized or thought about until I've watched him just look so uncomfortable right now. And that And that is really, you know, it's been stunning. So then the last thing is, because Mike makes that decision early, and that's what he's always done, there's no Nash dribble. The Nash dribble is where you dribble underneath the basket and come out the other side. And when you come out the other side, you can actually re-find Rudy on the lob. You can kick it to some of the guys in the corner. You can do a lot of things. But Mike, because he's been the primary scorer at Memphis all these years, he's probably not Nash dribbled in 12 years. Because he's making that decision of whether he's popping it back to Gasol, hitting that floater, going all the way to the rim at such an early moment in time. And now that's not, that decision is just a totally different floor than anything he's experienced. Those are all things I think he learns over time and he gets better with. Last year he was taking 3 shots a night at the rim. Now he's taking 1. Last year, he was taking 4 shots a night in the key at 50%. Still, it's good. Not great, but good. He's at 31% on those. Like, he was taking 16 shots a game last year. He's taking 12 now. He's just way out of rhythm, and it's just not normal stuff. Right now, he's taking kind of 2.5 floaters a game, 2 catch and shoots, and a jumper. Ron Boone called it the other day and needed him to take a jumper, and he did it. Exactly that. Last year, he was taking 3 floaters a game, 5 layups a game. Just very different. Last year, he had about 13 drives and 31 pick and roll ball handler plays a night. And now he's getting, you know, it looks like he's getting similar. He's getting 13 drives and 27 pick and rolls, but they're just totally different than what they were before. Totally different. So unless, and I think this is unlikely, he just like fell off the map athletically, and it just is completely gone at 32 years old, which does happen. You know, it's just going to be a process of him trying to figure this out. And that's what's hard for him right now. It's hard to watch, frankly. Great guy, struggling. Players all know it. And, you know, this team's got a lot of expectations on them right now, and they're not playing to the level they want to. You know, with that said, frankly, again, they're 1 defensive rebound away from being 5-2. Being 5-2 on the road with 2 losses on the road to the 2 best teams in the Western Conference. I mean, Lakers and Clippers both look absolutely outstanding. If you are in the market to buy or sell a home, Homie is real estate revolutionary. They are changing the way they are doing things. Now, we've talked about buying a home or selling a home with Homie, where they you just pay them $1,500 and that counts. And then they do all the work for you and do everything. And it's not commission-based, and it's not based on, you know, whether or not you did a great job with your landscaping or your remodel and suddenly you're paying more. You also can buy a home with Homie. Text LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588 to find out more. But I can give you the details a little bit. They'll help you find your dream home, tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deal, and then they work to get you $5,000 back. Because when you buy a home, it's not free. It's your money that pays for the seller, their agent, and whatever agent you choose to hire. So Homie is returning $5,000 to you. Just get started with Homie by texting LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. That's 88588 to get an experienced local Homie agent to help you every step of the way. Hollinger and Duncan drop today, Rejecting the Screen tomorrow. And my favorite show we do is the Monday Locked On NBA with Josh Lloyd, where he goes to the biggest stories with local experts, touches on the Warriors issues and some other things along the way. I was just pulling something up. Catch and shoot last night. Bogdanovich had 6. Ingles had 5. Jeff Green had 3. Donovan Mitchell had 2. And Mike Conley had 1. So we had 19 last night. That's great progress. Last year, our catch and shoots a game were at 24. So we still want to get more, but that's better last night. Donovan Mitchell is really outstanding. You want the positive is everybody wanted the year 1 to year 2 jump, as I've said a million times, was insane. The year 2 to year 3 jump is happening. He is averaging 2 more points a game. He is taking 2 less shots a game. He is shooting 52%. He is taking way more twos than threes, which is not the most comforting thing in the world, but it's leading to 6.6 free throws attempts a game instead of 5. So in that case, it's totally worth it. He's shooting 44% from 3. He's grabbing an extra rebound. He's down 1 assist. He's turning it over 1 less time. He's got an extra steal. He's incredible right now. Donovan Mitchell is really great. And that is probably the most exciting thing going on with the Utah Jazz right now, is that his usage rate is down. His efficiency is way up. His turnover rate is crazy low right now. And he's doing some neat things. Some of it's a little like, you know, frankly, he's shooting 52% on all mid-range shots. Maybe he can hold that. Here's the funny thing about mid-range shots. You kind of want to stay away from them because they're inefficient. But if for some reason you can start making them, and Donovan Mitchell actually can be a 52% mid-range shooter, then that is pretty awesome. And that opens up a ton of other stuff for him. That gets him being able to get back to the rim. He's taking 34% of his shots at the rim, which is his career high. This is the best part about last year. He started taking that short mid-range shot at a higher rate, and it took away his rim shots and some other stuff, and he didn't make that shot a lot. This year, he's taking that just as much, but getting to the rim more than a year ago. And then he's also getting to the foul line a lot more. So really, everything on him is fabulous. He's gone from getting fouled on 9% of his shots to 12% of his shots. Donovan's just been great. Absolutely great. And that's got to be the most, the team was built in a manner so that if Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert make the jumps, then we make the jump with them as a whole group. We being the franchise, not me and you, we're not playing. And Donovan's made the jump. He's been just great. There's a third area of concern. We'll dig into it a little bit more as the week goes on. Just whether or not some of these guys fit. Like Jeff Green right now is minus 19 per 100 possessions. The offense is way worse when he's on the floor. And I just wonder whether or not he's a perfectly good player, right? He's proven that. He's got a 13-year veteran. He's former number 5 pick of the draft. I'm a little nervous of whether or not his game fits correctly with what the Jazz are doing. He's certainly talented. And you see it. I mean, boy, he can fly through the sky when he needs to, and he's still just got incredible athleticism, and he's got such a versatile game. He can bring the ball up the floor, and there's so many things that he does. But right now it just doesn't really feel right. It's an interesting landscape for the Jazz right now. I think it feels worse than it is, but I will be honest. I don't think it feels very good right now. It feels as though the offense has not clicked in at a little bit of a surprising level. Mike Conley has definitely struggled a little bit more than anyone had expected. And there just hasn't been a smooth sailing part. I actually think we have a little PTSD fandom. I don't mean to use something so serious, but I can't think of another phenomenon. Like, the preseason was such a worry word for all of us about the defense. And then we solved that, and then the offense is not very good right now. And so it's almost like we've just been worrying with all these high expectations for 4.5 straight weeks. And it feels like at least a little bit of like just that there's an angst. Now, we get through the next two, and if we can go string 6 of 7 together, that might solve all the problems and make everyone feel better. I mean, Minnesota feels really good about themselves and has no angst right now, and they're very fired up. And I'm very certain that had we opened the year with Brooklyn, Charlotte, Miami, Philadelphia, and Washington, we might feel pretty good about ourselves too, though that Miami win is a pretty darn good one, and their offense is really good, except for the Philadelphia game. So, to their credit, if we could have played Washington, Charlotte, and Brooklyn so far, I think we'd feel a little bit better. But we've frankly played Sacramento and lost one of them. So, it doesn't, we'll see. Donovan's been brilliant. There's just a bunch of little things. I think it's becoming more and more clear what a huge adjustment for the Mike Conley this is. All right, that is Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. Go grab any of our two national shows that are out today. And if you haven't subscribed to Rejecting the Screen, please do. Hollinger and Duncan will be super interesting. It always is. Followed by, I would go to Locked On NBA with Josh Lloyd today as well. Have a great one. Tell your smart speaker right now to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network.